Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Monday, April 9th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi there, Melody.
Well, it's great to be here. We have a program just packed full of news and information that is coming out, and let's go ahead and my computer does something strange. My articles go to the side off the screen. It just did pop back, so I don't know what happened to the other screen, but all you listeners know how I am with my computer, so if you hear a big crash, that's me throwing it out the window on April 9th. 2018. But anyway, gold today, you know, considering what all is going on, gold should have been up $100, $300 today. But right, we'll take $3.40 because it's going to go, and we're going to have those $100 moves that Bob Chapman always promised us. So gold up $3.40 today at $13.37, closer to $13.38. But silver up 16 cents, $16.62. Platinum was up 18 at 939, and palladium was up 32, 3.5% at $942. So those two are in a race, the platinum and palladium. USDX today, weaker, 0.27 at 89.86. Crude oil was up 1.33 at 63.39. And, the paper markets were up over 300 points. However, they couldn't hold them. And we're still seeing some numbers coming through. But at this moment, the Dow is only up 46 points. So a big drop, 300 points. 23,979. The NASDAQ was up 35 points at 6,950. The S&P was up 8 at 2,613. 10-year yield, when I did the program, radio program this morning, it was trading at 281. Now we're at 2.79, but it's still higher than from Friday, 2.79%, up 0.40. So it was much higher this morning. European Asian markets were all stronger, still in the extreme fear sector, and Bitcoin is having a hard time holding on to that 7,000 level. I think Dave wants to talk a little bit, or we're going to talk just a little bit about that here in just a little bit. But I mean, if everyone reads the news today, I'm not sure if the market drops so big. Oh, here it is. The FBI raids Trump lawyer. The reason I like to do this program at 4 o'clock is because lots of times you get a lot of breaking news, because they don't release this information until the markets are closed, because you wouldn't want to affect the markets now, would you, Dave?
Oh,
absolutely. You know, they're all concerned about your money. And this just came out. The FBI raided the office of President Trump's longtime personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, seizing records related to several topics, including payments to a pornographic film actress. Federal prosecutors in Manhattan obtained the search warrant after receiving a referral from the special counsel, Mueller. This is according to Cohen's lawyer, who called the search completely inappropriate and unnecessary. The search does not appear to be directly related to Mr. Mueller's investigation, but likely resulted from information he had uncovered and gave to prosecutors in New York. Let's see if there's anything else in there except about, a bunch of attorneys making statements. His attorney and his attorney of the attorney of the attorney of the attorney. Let's see. It doesn't really say anything more than what we already know on the topic, other than that was the major headline. The FBI also seized emails, tax documents, and business records. Mr. Cohen has cooperated with authorities and turned over thousands of documents to congressional investigators that were looking into or are looking into the Russian election meddling. The seized records include communications between Mr. Trump and Mr. Cohen, which would likely require a special team of agents to review because conversations between lawyers and clients are, of course, protected. And that is all the information that we have right now. And let's see, this was Matt Tapuzzo by the New York Times. It's a New York Times article. So we'll have to see where that leads. But again, always a lot of breaking news at 4 o'clock. It's a great time to. We broke a lot of stories. We didn't break them, but we reported on a lot of breaking stories here on this program. So Bob Chapman used to love that, you know, when he could come out and we'd be the first ones to be able to talk about it. So on the radio anyway. So we'll keep following up on that. And
the Russian markets, Melody, didn't fare too well today either. I think coming on the heels of the U.S. sanctions on a number of Russian tycoons and oligarchs, companies. Moscow traded stocks headed for their biggest drop in 4 years, and their currency also slid the most in the world, and the nation's credit risk consequently jumped up. Interesting effect there.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, earlier today I was talking about, I don't know if I can, you know, one of the connections also is with Syria. I don't know what their markets did today, but what was interesting is I came across, as I explained this morning on my earlier program, the National Inflation Association, I read a lot of things, and I subscribe to, you know, various publications on the internet and, you know, so forth and whatnot. Half of the stuff I ignore because they're paid to write articles, they're paid to promote something, but every once in a while you're going to get some really good news. This kind of is how the National Inflation Association is. You know, probably about once a year, maybe twice a year, they'll come out with something that's like, wow, that's pretty powerful, interesting. You know, it's pretty good insights, and they did that today, I believe. And they did this based on the on why would Assad bomb his own people with chemical weapons. Over the last 12 months, the world's number one best performing fiat currency had been the Syrian pound on the black market, rising 28% against the dollar. In addition, Syria's Damascus Securities Exchange has been the world's number one best performing stock market. Over the last 12 months, a U.S. dollar-adjusted basis, the Damascus Weighted Index, had gained about 148%. So while ISIS defeated the Syrian citizens moving back into areas that ISIS once controlled, the Syrian citizens moving back into areas that ISIS once controlled, capital began to flow back into the economy. Assad would have nothing to gain and everything to lose if he suddenly used chemical weapons against the people that strongly supported him. You have tens of thousands of innocent civilians that have been killed in Syria by U.S.-led coalition airstrikes, and hundreds of thousands more have been murdered in Syria by terrorist groups backed by the U.S. in their quest for regime change. We've seen what happens in these regime changes. Russia successfully prevented regime change in Syria that has been planned for decades. And, Americans voted for Donald Trump, believing that he would bring our troops back home from Syria. He made that statement last week. Our troops were coming home. They didn't want him to bring the troops home. A lot of folks thought that the generals and military people and so forth, they all thought that our troops should stay in Syria. And and it has been exactly a year that he went in there and from the other chemical attack and had that military operation. So he had said that the troops would be leaving Syria very soon. So it is interesting. I don't believe in coincidences. And there was an example given on this article that if you had invested $10,000 into the Damascus Weighted Index in 2016, the day the election was won by Donald Trump, today it would be worth over $51,000. So the question is, would he throw all this away when the Syrian people were finally winning? And so, you know, I get with these dictators and so forth, you know, they don't, you know, perhaps we agree with their thinking most of the time, and who knows. But again, you'd have to question why. The timing is what it's all about. And right when we were ready to pull our troops out, you have Israel in there bombing all the time. And, you know, in Revelation, you know, Damascus has to be destroyed. So it's kind of interesting that all of this is taking place at this point in time. And so the big question is, who really started the chemical attacks, if there really was one. So anyway, I got a little sidetracked there as I was finishing that thought. So, you know, that's the question. And you have three powerful foreign lobbies in Washington that were pushing for the U.S. to stay in Syria. So, you know, we'll see how this fares. But you know what? There was another headline today where Iran, they're ready to start working on their nukes again. If that today was John Bolton's first day on the job, we know how he feels. You know, we know what his thoughts are. This was his first day in the office. And so we'll see. We'll see. I guess an announcement is supposed to be made sometime today as far as, you know, any situations on Syria. So we'll have to, you know, see about that. But going back to finances today, subprime mortgages, you remember those? Subprime mortgages at U.S. banks doubled over the last 12 months, and it is on a pace to double again this year. Subprime loans rank among the fastest growing investments for banks in the U.S. Bottom line, they're back to it again. Take those regulations off, or no, those regulations are coming off and they're back to their old ways. Of course, they've been doing this for 12 months. They doubled. Coincidence that these regulations are going off and all of a sudden these subprime mortgages are coming back? Probably not. Making risky loans to borrowers were with pitiful credit. What could go wrong? And you just leave it to the too big to fail banks to try the same thing again and expect a different result. It's textbook insanity. But this isn't an identical repeat performance, though. The banking industry has changed the name. They don't call them subprime anymore. Oh no, that has a bad taste. Leaves a bad taste in your mouth. Now we call them non-QM, meaning non-qualified mortgage.
Been there, done that.
I love it. They just change.
Subprime, that is.
Yeah, I know. They just change the name. They don't call it bankruptcy anymore. They call it restructure. You know, make it kinder, gentler, nicer. But it's essentially the same thing. Banks extend loans to borrowers who don't qualify for conventional mortgages. They either have bad credit ratings or they don't have enough money to make a down payment. And they lower their score. I mean, their score, they only have to have, what, maybe 400 to get a loan. So, I mean, it will affect the entire financial system. And it will happen again. These mortgage brokers, they get huge fees for closing individual loans. The investment bankers, they make money packaging the loans into subprime bonds. And the rating agencies like S&P and Moody's, they made money slapping pristine AAA ratings on these bonds, you know, especially promising the world that they were risk-free. So looking back, they obviously weren't risk-free. Banks were making risky loans to borrowers that had a history of not paying their debts. And guess what? We have another housing bubble blowing up. We don't have the same kind of housing bubble today that we did in 2007. It's more like a housing bubble 2.0. Nevertheless, we still have the same fundamental problem. People with average incomes cannot afford to buy an average price home. Well, you can't find an average price home either. So to keep the ball rolling, banks are stepping up to the plate and loaning them money anyway. Dave?
It's how true.
Hello, Dave.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
You know, I like how that article ends with a quote from Einstein. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Central bankers at the Fed sure do seem to suffer from this affliction, along with a lot of others in the banking system. People don't learn, or they forget, especially when there's a dollar to be made today. Turning our attention to consumer debt, which we've been finding more and more in the news the last few months. U.S. consumer debt rose in February by the least in 5 months as credit card balances stalled, apparently indicating Americans' appetite for borrowing waned after a fourth quarter shopping spree. Nevertheless, total consumer credit rose $10.6 billion. That follows an upwardly revised $15.6 billion in January. That, according to the Fed, revolving credit cards outstanding rose by $148 million. That's month over month, the smallest gain since a drop in November 2013. And that was after almost a billion and a half rise in January. Nevertheless, Melody, there's $18 trillion in consumer debt outstanding out there. We're on very shaky ground. The takeaways that analysts are viewing from this the latest month is that the slowdown in revolving debt, which includes credit cards, may help to explain why consumer spending gains remains relatively sluggish in January and February. Growth in non-revolving debt, which includes student loans, auto loans, also eased during February.
And I hear the music, and I guess we'll be heading into a break. We got much more to talk about when we return. Thank you for joining us. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. Find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as common sense voices of integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. And it is Monday, April 9th, 2018. Gold was up a few bucks today. Silver was up good. Had a nice showing. Palladium had a great showing, a little over 3.5%. Markets pulled back big. And one of the things I said we'd mention briefly, because I'm not a fan of Bitcoin, but it is interesting. And I know some of my listeners, I don't know how many of you, but some of you probably do have the cryptocurrencies. And I always believed it was a Ponzi scheme. You need that new money in there to make the prices go up, and they've set these little targets, and when they get to these targets you can see, you know, the market go up, everybody gets in, think that they're getting a deal. They have trained the investors well and they just continue to get wealthier and wealthier. They've been hacked, it's been stolen. It's like, why? Unless you're just playing with some money that you can afford to lose, you know, I can't even imagine the yeah, it was exciting when it went to 20,000. I mean, it was just like, you know, everyone was in awe of the way it moved. But what do you have? You have nothing. You know, unless you cashed it in, the taxes on your cryptocurrencies, your taxes on Bitcoin, I mean, I read where, you know, people were paying 40-50% in taxes. And so it's just waiting to be regulated. It's just waiting to be. So it's like, plus Rob West said he invested $2,000 into it, and it was now 40,000, I believe. Was it 40,000? I think he said it was. And he can't get any of it back. He can't get it out until this fall. So, because there's no buyers, and they're doing an IPO or something on it, so he can't. So it's just like, oh, that should make you feel real comfortable. So, I mean, it's only 2,000 that he put in, you know, certainly amount that he can afford to lose. But when you see that type of gain, you'd want to pull it out right away. But most people don't, thinking it's always going to, either they can't or they think it's always going to go higher. And the next thing you know, Bitcoin lost over 52% this year. And people think that it's going to go back. Most likely it will not. But just today, for 2 hours, Bitcoin dropped more than 6%. As the April tax filing deadline approaches, it hit a new low of 67.05 early this morning. And according to CoinDesk, Bitcoin prices have fallen more than 27% over the past month. When has ever your gold coins ever done that? Tax-related selling has been a key driver of this month's sell-off. Thomas Lee, head of a FundStrat Global Advisor, said in a report last week that U.S. households likely owe $25 billion in capital gain taxes for their cryptocurrency holdings. I don't mean to chuckle, but...
Whoops, forgot about that.
Oh,
sorry,
yeah.
Sorry, honey.
Oops. The entire cryptocurrency market has lost more than half of its market capitalization since beginning of the year. And, you know, we saw Bitcoin falling below 10,000 in March after the SEC announced that online platforms trading digital assets are considered securities need to register with the agency. So, again, it's, you know, if it's too good to be true, ladies and gentlemen, first, you know, the ones who get in there first, they're the ones who make the money, because they're the first ones out of it too. And they're the ones who make the money. Janet Yellen, we haven't heard her name for a month.
Who?
Yellen, Janet, Miss Janet, Miss Janet.
Yellen is Yellen these days.
She's now Jellin.
Well, Jellin, yeah. She yelled over the weekend in an op-ed that was published in yesterday's Washington Post. She's rebutting a study from Stanford University's Hoover Institution that blamed entitlement spending for the nation's worsening financial picture, which, as listeners know, economists expect the shortfall to surpass $1 trillion next year, be close to that this year, and worsen after that. However, Yellen and a team of fellow economists rejected that notion that Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and veterans benefits are the prime culprit. Instead, they insist the main problem is Congress having passed a tax cut bill at exactly the wrong time. Now, because words matter, I'm just going to give you a little bit of a quote from her op-ed. She says, as we focus on the long-run fiscal situation, our goal should be to put the debt on a declining path as a share of the economy. That will require running smaller deficits in strong economic periods such as the present to offset the larger deficits that are needed in recessions to restore demand and avoid deeper crises. Last year's Tax Cuts and Job Act turned that economic on its head. That economic logic, pardon me. The tax cut sliced corporate rates from 35 to 21% and reduced taxes for millions of Americans nearly across the board, although we know by now that some Americans will receive more than others. Subsequent to that, the president signed a $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill that, interestingly, he and other administration officials recently — this hasn't gotten much press, I don't think it'll go anywhere — but they've talked about rescinding that bill. That's a rarity, especially something of this size.
I couldn't even imagine what it would happen to the markets.
Well, talk about uncertainty.
Yeah.
You know, while Fed officials for years have been pleading for fiscal help from Washington, Yellen and her colleagues now argue that the stimulus plan was not so well timed. You know, as we know, Congress has battled in recent years over spending and the debt ceiling. It seems every other month, in fact. We at least know that we can go down the rest of this federal fiscal year and probably not have to hear about it until closer to the expiration of the fiscal year in September 30th, just as the fall midterm elections are gearing up for all the negativity that I'm sure is going to be over the airwaves by that point. Now, in 2011, S&P downgraded the U.S. credit rating, you know, on concerns over repeated debt disputes. That's a short 7 years ago. Last week, though, Fitch Ratings reaffirmed its AAA rating for the U.S., even though it warned that, quote, the outlook for public finances has deteriorated since the last review. They're in this, I'll call it this Federal Reserve ease, this very officious type language that it's, you know, you just scratching your head and saying, what? Can you just be a little more direct and open? Tell us how you really feel, there, Melody. But, you know, Fitch said that although the tax cuts and spending increases have put pressure on the finances, the U.S. has a higher debt tolerance than other nations because of the U.S. dollar standing as the global reserve currency and the deep and liquid market for treasuries. Uh-oh, Melody. We'll see how long Fitch is is going to be comfortable with their AAA rating.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to Greg Hunter prior to the program today, and he's actually scheduled to be on the program tomorrow. So Greg Hunter will be on tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. We were talking about David Stockman, and we refer to him every now and then on this program. And what he was talking about is he was talking about just how bad China's debt is. And so it's like, do we have a higher debt tolerance because we do have the global reserve currency? But then on the other hand, you know, you have China that is, you know, trying, you know, at their most to replace some of that, you know, with their currency. So I don't, perhaps we do have a bigger debt tolerance, but what if those countries don't want the debt anymore?
Well, yeah, the so-called nuclear option, as it's being referred to, if, you know, China does, as it had intimated earlier in the year, scale back on its first scale back on its purchases of treasuries, and then, God forbid, actually unload what it now owns, which most people, most economists who follow the Treasury buying habits just, you know, are very skeptical will happen. But, you know, who knows? In you know, at the height of, you know, if negotiations between us and China, you know, should fall apart, and, you know, other geopolitical, you know, tensions rise, you know, because of North Korea or whatever, I think all bets are off. I mean, you know, if China is backed into a corner and doesn't see any other way out, you know, short of actually engaging in a military confrontation, which nobody would want, this is a, you know, a viable way for them to react. But now I don't see that coming. Do you?
Well, you know what I do see coming? I don't see it coming, but I feel something's coming. This volatility, these situations that are arising, you just don't have so many at one point in time, and something nasty doesn't come from it. Something will break. I'm not sure where it is or what it will be. You just can't have this negotiations going on with North Korea. We know the deal with that. The trade wars. Now you have Syria. I mean, you have our debt. What else? I mean, my gosh, I could sit here and probably name five more. You know, we talked about, you know, the creation of these subprime loans again. We're talking about the people. They're not spending like they were. Something is going to break. It's not like we're just going along and everything is, you know, the economy is great and everyone is experiencing, you know, great rewards and, you know, things are trickling down and people are out there. No, that isn't happening. To some degree it is, but to a big degree it isn't. So something's got to break. One of these things is not going to end well. I don't know which one it will be that's not going to end well. But when I was reading Doug Noland article, and I do want to tell the listeners, if you subscribe to our newsletter, most likely it'll be tomorrow morning before it gets out. You know, when he talks about the amount of debt and the problems and the programs that have been created, I mean, it's just a matter of time until something's going to break. And then when you have all these other I don't know if they're distractions or problems, situation, I don't know what you want to call them. It can't go on. A year from now, we're not going to be sitting here talking about something happening, because I do believe something will be happening by, you know, way before then. So, and, you know, no, I'm not blaming the administration, but it is the administration that we have. And anytime you, and if you look to where we're trying to fix something, even Trump said this weekend, you know, the trade wars. We're not in a trade war, but we're going to have pain. Anything that we adjust to try to make it better for the U.S., there's going to be pain. People are going to lose. And it's not going to just, oh, good, we're going to bring jobs back and everything is going to be peachy keen now for the next 30 years. No. It's not going to happen that way. And and I think people have been lulled into this false sense of security that we have an administration, we have a president that wants to make America great again, so we're just going to sit and wait and see how great it's going to be. And that's the worst thing that you can do. But I'll guarantee you that's what a lot of people are doing. And those are the ones that will lose the most. But talking about money, inflation, Chicago Federal Reserve Bank President Charles Evans, he's one of the Fed's most dovish policymakers, said that he's optimistic inflation is going to reach the Fed's 2% goal and that the gradual rate increases will be appropriate. So they're going to continue rate increases and we're going to continue to have inflation. Now that's the Fed's goal, 2%. Anybody with the right mind out there, tell me that we have an inflation rate lower than 2% in the things that we need to live. Yeah, you can find maybe TVs. You know, maybe your TVs, telephones. Did you ever think in your life you'd be paying $800,000 for a cell phone? It just makes me, it's just like, you know, so there's still a lot of money out there to be spent, you know, and people, you know, certainly going to have their cell phones and everything. But they're still looking for the 2% to be on track. The Fed is going to meet to set policy in June. So, you know, I would expect a rate increase at that point in time in June. And do we have a date on that, June? I guess just in, you know, the first couple of weeks in June is usually when they do it.
Yeah, probably, I think it's the third week, in June.
The third week in June?
Yeah.
So, you know, depending on whether 10-year, where the 10-year is at the point in time. So, again, you know, it certainly is going to prove interesting. As I said, people aren't spending. Tell us about Nine West. They're filing for bankruptcy, Dave.
Nine West.
Yes.
Yeah, indeed. We know Nine West Holdings, which owns the Nine West and Anne Klein brands, has filed for Chapter 11. Their filing last Friday shows the company owing more than $1 billion to creditors. Nine West said that it plans to sell Nine West and its Bandolino line to Authentic Brands Group. ABC, its initials, owns Juicy Couture and Euro Pastel, among others. We'll tell you a little bit more after the break.
All right, stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter. It usually comes out on Monday, but by the time I get it finished today, we're just too busy here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading today for me to focus on it, and so if it gets too late, we'll just do it in the morning. But so I appreciate your patience on that too. And I know we wanted to make this announcement regarding James Corbett. He's on vacation. So for those of you who enjoy James Corbett, and I enjoy James Corbett, I think he does an excellent job. He'll be returning May 9th is the next scheduled interview with James Corbett. So you have us to listen to in place of James Corbett. So
hurry back, James.
Hurry. No. Yeah. Anyway, and then again, just as a reminder, Greg Hunter will be on tomorrow. So you wanted to finish up perhaps the bankruptcy for Nine West, and then we can go on and talk a little bit about the post office, since that is near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we talked about Nine West filing for a bankruptcy, a Chapter 11 bankruptcy on Friday. Nine West said it does expect to continue operating normally during the bankruptcy process. The company, which has been owned by Sycamore Partners Management since 2014, joins a growing list of retailers that have filed just within the past year. Claire's filed for bankruptcy last month, Toys R Us in September. The toy seller said recently that is closing or selling all of its U.S. stores. A sad thing for parents and kiddies alike. Last year, Melody, more than 7,000 stores closed in the country, which set an all-time record. Retailers have been struggling to compete with online retailers like Amazon and suffering from the death of the mall. Our junior high pastime.
Going to the mall.
Yep. And of course, many of these retailers have struggled to survive under just literally mountains of debt.
Well, you know what? They should bring back the mall, because that was actually healthier. I mean, we went to the mall, we walked around, we socialized. Now you'll see the kids, what do? They play games. They go in their rooms and whatever, and they play games. They don't go to the malls. They don't go to, you know, ice cream places or pizza joints or things like that. I don't think they do. Perhaps not as much as we did. So
if they do, they're healthier. If they do, they're just sitting around.
I'm playing on their cell phones.
On their cell phones, yes. I mean, hey, it's the times we live in. We've become tech addicts, and
yes.
We'll see how Mr. Zuckerberg performs in front of Congress. Is that tomorrow or Wednesday?
I don't know when he's going. I just saw that he was heading up there. But you know what, though, Dave? Was anybody really? Why should people really be surprised? You know, everybody knew what they were doing. I mean, it was just common knowledge.
Well, yeah, you're right, but I mean, ignorance is bliss once again. I mean, it shows that there was, I mean, to some extent, there was this level of trust. Naive or not, and I think we're learning a lot now about, you know, just the times we live in and how our expectations, which have been, you know, which the big corporations have tried to manage for us, that if we step back and pay even a little bit attention to this, you know, I think it may result in some changed behavior. But I, unfortunately, I'm skeptical. I do. I read an article over the weekend about this was really about the U.S. becoming a culture of technological addiction. I just have to get into it more because I think it rattled something inside of me that I hadn't seen before. So I'll withhold judgment only to say that, you know, we live in interesting times and you know, trust but verify. I think we're even beyond that now. If we're not careful, you know, there's going to be technology that's going to control us beyond a point of no return. And I worry about the younger generation in particular, but I see it creeping up the age totem pole. Yeah. And even among our generation and in between, you know, now we go out to eat. And, you know, once we're seated by the host or hostess, you know, the first thing a lot of us do is, you know, get out our cell phones. And
I don't.
Not all of us.
Not all of us.
Anyway, off the track, but.
Well, I think it's important, and it is. I can only imagine what it's going to be like in 10 years. I mean, look how fast the cell phones, they weren't around. When did they become popular? I mean, sure, we had phones, but what, 2004 when Apple released its iPhone?
Yeah, I remember my first one. It was sometime in the 90s, I'd call it cellular in quotes. You know, they were hardwired with cords into your car. Mm-hmm. You know, and we had the some of them. I mean, I guess the second generation then, or the first generation A, came out with, you know, again, they were phones with cords on the handles, but you could plug them into the cigarette lighter and you could carry them out. It was like a little power pack. you just think back and say, boy, but you're right, it's been so fast.
Well, I mean, those were the first cell phones, but I mean, as far as, you know, the computers and everything like that, I mean, iPhone, I don't think came out until.
Oh,
and they
no.
did. They really did revolutionize the cell phone. And,
oh, my gosh, yeah.
And I remember.
The smart technology.
Yeah, yeah. So it really isn't. So I can't imagine what it'll be in 10 years. But the U.S. Postal Service, I said, is near and dear. We do a lot of business with the U.S. Post Office. And recently we had President Trump tweet about Amazon, and certainly Amazon gets blamed a lot as the online retailer who's put out a lot of these malls out of business, Penny's and those, and Sears that can't compete, you know, with Amazon. And the tweet had something to do with the agreement that Amazon has with the post office. And I talked to my post person at the post office and I asked him about it, and they hate Amazon.
Oh, why is that? Just the workload.
He says no, because it requires work. It requires work. He says Amazon makes them deliver on Sundays.
Oh, is that why? And I see all these postal trucks, mm-hmm, out on Sunday. I saw two of them yesterday.
Yeah, he says if they have packages that need to be delivered on Sunday, the U.S. Post Office has to bring people in, and that is all overtime.
Oh, yeah, that can't be too cheap.
And, you know, so it's, you know, it makes it expensive for the post office, and then, of course, giving them, you know, a deal. But you would think when you make a deal with a business that this should all come into play as you strike that deal to make sure your expenses are covered, unless they didn't realize how much extra work they would be doing. So he thinks it was a bad deal, and that was just one of the examples that he gave me as far as why it is costing the post office more money. I've seen it in the pricing and the registered and insured. I mean, the prices are just skyrocketing. What used to cost $20 is now $40, $50, $60.
Wow.
It's incredible, and they don't raise the postage. And I couldn't figure out why would the post office lower postage a penny? Was it a year ago or a year and a half ago? They lowered it a penny only to increase it again. It's like they really don't make much sense. But Congress is looking into the budget problem. They're facing a $15 billion in debt. And there are possibly the Taxpayers Protection Alliance warns that a taxpayer-funded bailout is becoming increasingly more likely as the Postal Service debt racks up. Yet Senator Thomas Carper introduced a legislation which is intended to improve Postal Service operations, services, and transparency. And I'm just thinking to myself, oh, yeah, that's exactly what we want. We want government introducing legislation to tell how the post office needs to be run through operations, services, and transparency when we can't even get the Federal Reserve audited. And they want transparency with, anyway, that's another story and so forth. But it's just like, keep, you know. But anyway, the senators sponsoring the legislation also supported a similar reform bill that failed to advance in 2015. The bill includes language that would allow $15 billion worth of loans from the U.S. Treasury to be forgiven. When's the last time that happened, when you had, you know, government allowed $15 billion of loans to be forgiven?
No, we used to do it a lot to some of our foreign debtors, although sort of different circumstances. Not too often.
And the thing of it is, this $15 billion is their pension. A lot of it is their pension. And because they have to pay their pension, like, what, 5-10 years in advance? You know, so it's like, you know, they have to prepay, and that is a lot of their problem. And but the U.S. Postal Service counters that the issue is declining mail volume and costs it cannot control. The U.S. Government Accountability Office found in a report that the Postal Service is facing $121 billion in total debt and unfunded liabilities at the start of fiscal year 2017. So we're talking $121 billion. What's $15 billion? That's just pennies. But the $15 billion, the retiree health and pension benefits, which accounted for most of that expense, the outstanding debt alone is at the current statutory limit of $15 billion. So it also reported a net loss of $2.7 billion last year, a net loss of $5.1 billion for fiscal year 2015. It also reported a $5.5 billion loss in the year before that. So, bailouts are coming.
Yeah, I suspect it's, I mean, I'm, you know, on the one hand, I'm amazed that in 2018 we can still, you know, send a piece of mail and have someone get it the next day or the day after for, what, 49, 50 cents? So, you know, I for one certainly don't have a problem with, you know, even a doubling of the basic postage. But I think they got to really watch themselves on the specialty postage items that you were referring to, because that will send people, you know, to the UPS and what have you. I think, you know, as an organization, the Postal Service, you know, has got to look on the spending side of things. And so, you know, I think they, if they're not already, and I suspect they are, you think that there's going to have to be some big plan of attrition over the next 5 or 10 years that is, you know, people continue to retire. They're just going to have to look for ways to boost productivity, and you know, not fill you know, some or most of those positions as a way of you know, getting to a more sustainable financing.
But you know what, though? You know what, too, though? I know I'm going to get a lot of people upset with me, but, you know, the union, I mean, there's all kinds of problems. And, you know, I hear the stories from the post office and the wasted time. It's unbelievable.
I'm not sure if I know what you mean, the wasted time.
The employees, the way, you know, sometimes they're just not allowed to do something, and if they want to do something, it takes days to find out if they can do it or not. I mean, the efficiency in the post office, and a lot of it is all tied to the union.
And, well, it's tied, you know, there's a little nuance here, I would argue, with all due respect, that it's not the union, but perhaps the union contract.
Yeah.
And but that's two parties, you know, and you know, it's not just the employees who are the main beneficiaries of the union, of a union contract, but I mean, it's the management too. It's a, you know, a two-party collectively bargained agreement. So you know, perhaps we need stronger management, you know, to set it on a more sustainable financial course.
But and the problem
that's
is,
what I'm saying.
You get the stronger management and their hands are tied. They can't do what needs to be done. I remember when I worked for the bank and I was an officer and I wanted to move, I think it was a desk. And I said, come on, let's move this. No, we can't touch it. What do you mean you can't touch it? We're moving it 3 feet. We can't because of the union. And they actually had to get approval and everything and send special people up to move the desk probably 3 to 6 feet. I mean, it was just like, are you kidding me? And that's part of the problem we have in this world today. But anyway, it's another day, another topic, and we are out of time. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining Dave and me today. Thank you, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Got me a wealthy man.